Hello, I'm Linor Moudou. Welcome to Health Chat. The World Health Organization has declared mpox, a public health emergency of international concern, for the second time in 2 years, following the outbreak of the viral infection in the Democratic Republic of Congo that has spread to neighboring countries. A new variant, Clade 1B, appears to spread more easily, with more than 17,000 suspected cases and over 500 deaths this year. The Democratic Republic of Congo hopes to receive its first doses of an mpox vaccine next week, following promises from Japan and the United States to help fight its outbreak. That's according to Congolese Health Minister Samuel Roger Kamba Mulamba. Earlier on Monday, Japan's Ministry of Health, Labor and Welfare said in an email statement to Reuters that it was preparing to provide Congo with mpox vaccines and needles in cooperation with the World Health Organization and other partners. Their arrival will help address a huge inequity that left African countries with no access to the two shots used in 2022 outbreak, while the vaccines were widely available in Europe and the US. Experts say the global emergency status aims to accelerate resource allocation and international cooperation to contain the mpox outbreak. For more insight, I spoke with Dr. Sam Boland, Acting Incident Manager at the WHO Regional Office for Africa.
I think that the first thing that's really important to note is that the response to mpox in the African region has already very much been ongoing. So both in countries that are actively affected, as well as in countries that are at risk, the World Health Organization has been working with ministries of health and member states, as well as coordinating partners, to be sure that we're already actively responding to this particular problem. The declaration of a public health emergency of international concern that was made by Director General Tedros earlier this evening really serves as a call to action to the global community, which can have a lot of positive consequences for our ability to effectively respond to the crisis at hand. So in addition to all of the work that was already ongoing, what this means is that we can work with the international community to make sure that we have the resources available to respond. But in addition to that, it means that, as we are already doing, we can work under what are called the international health regulations within the emergency response framework to really make sure that we're effectively coordinating the response. So we're going to be doubling down on our efforts, bringing in those additional resources, and making sure that we can bolster the work that we're already doing.
What are the recommendations to address this outbreak and mpox in general, particularly this new form of mpox that seems more virulent?
It's another great question. I think the first quick point of clarification is that there actually is a treatment available, Tecovirimat, and the World Health Organization has been supporting countries in the African region, for example, South Africa, to be sure that they're able to access doses of this very novel therapeutic to be sure that people are able to get the clinical care that they need. And this is a very difficult process, and it's the same process that is true for vaccination, which is that really one of the barriers is a regulatory one. We have to work country by country to be sure that countries are able to import and then put to use something like the therapeutic that's available, or in the future, the vaccinations that we may be able to roll out. We have worked with, for example, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, with their national regulatory authorities and their Ministry of Health, to be able to bring vaccines and to come up with a vaccination plan that hopefully in quite the near future, in the coming weeks or a couple of months, they'll be able to begin targeted vaccinations within the country. Dr. Tedros last week, independent of the PHEIC declaration, initiated what's called an emergency use listing procedure for two different mpox vaccines. That process will take a little bit of time, but once it is concluded, provided that the vaccines are assessed to be viable, there will then be the opportunity to really more significantly roll out vaccines to interested countries. And so what we'll be doing in the meantime is working with risk communication, community engagement, and also that regulatory component that I already discussed to be sure that once vaccines do become accessible, that we're in a position to hit the ground running and roll them out to the people that need them.
So until vaccine becomes accessible, what happens? Countries like Nigeria and Congo have been battling mpox for a while now with limited access.
So a lot of people are working really incredibly hard and working very, very fast in order to respond to the outbreak already. And I think that the one thing that's always important to remember is that vaccination and also this experimental therapeutic, Tecovirimat, that I reflected on before, those are one tool among really a large number in the public health toolkit. The bread and butter of a public health response is effective surveillance, public health and social measures, contact tracing, infection control, all put together with good risk communication and community engagement, built on the support and the leadership of civil society organizations, and making sure that we include the affected populations in the response that we deliver. All of that is already ongoing. And so with mpox specifically, even without vaccination, the prognosis for most people that do become infected with mpox is very good. And what we are already doing is making sure to give guidance to countries to make sure that they deliver quality and quality clinical care when cases do arise, and to work with people and with communities to try to prevent those cases from happening in the first place. That work is happening before, it's happening now, and it will continue to be to take place over the coming weeks and months and however long this particular public health problem continues to be with us.
Speaking of contact tracing, do we have a clear understanding as to who patient zero is, where it's coming from, and also the way by which the outbreak is spreading across borders?
The idea of there being some kind of index case, which is the terminology for you used, was a sort of patient zero. With mpox, that's not something that we are able to identify for most of the outbreak that we're focusing on at the moment. This is because mpox has really been endemic for quite a long time in parts of Africa, especially in Central Africa and also in West Africa. So sometimes, depending on the country or the particular specific outbreak we're talking about, it is possible to identify a patient from whom we think the first case was communicated from what we call the animal reservoir. In the case of the outbreak in the Democratic Republic of the Congo at this moment in time, however, really we're talking about cases that are being communicated between one person and another person. And so at this point, the concern is really about making sure that we can provide those people the support and the prevention as well, and the risk communication and community engagement they need to try to prevent that transmission from continuing.
The Africa CDC declared mpox a continental emergency a day prior to the WHO. To what extent is WHO working with the Africa CDC to coordinate a unified response to the mpox outbreak?
The World Health Organization, including the World Health Organization Regional Office for Africa, collaborates very, very closely with the Africa CDC. They are a key partner in all of the different scopes of work for this kind of outbreak and outbreak response. As the WHO ourselves and under the international health regulations and our emergency response framework, we work very, very hard to be sure that we're in a position to support coordination between all partners, including the Africa CDC, but also including other UN agencies such as UNICEF and other INGOs and the like, to be able to ensure there's a harmonized, synergistic, and coherent response, coordinated response to this particular crisis at hand.
And finally, in the wake of this emergency declaration, what long-term measures is WHO considering to strengthen preparedness and prevent future outbreaks of mpox and other zoonotic diseases in Africa?
It's a really amazing question. And, you know, the World Health Organization gets a lot of attention during the declarations of outbreaks like we saw today. But we are here every day doing exactly this kind of work. The long-term, difficult, laborious, and also expensive work to be sure that we're building health systems, strengthening building resilience within health systems, and addressing all of these key needs, and overall over time building capacity, not just in things like surveillance and contact tracing, but also in things like primary healthcare and the ability to be sure that we're able to reach people and that people have access to the health that they need. That over time is the single best thing that we can do, not only for being able to ensure that people have access to necessary health services, but frankly, also to be sure that we're able to identify these outbreaks and quickly contain them when they occur. Because it's really important that when people are unwell, that they are able to access their health system so that they can be seen by their medical professional and that that medical professional can raise the alarm if need be. So every day we work on the preparedness, also the readiness, and also the response. And we put these things forward together to be sure that as we respond to a particular problem, we're also trying to build that capacity to be sure that we can mitigate the risk of these kinds of outbreaks occurring in the future as well.
There have only been a few outbreaks that have been declared global emergency, the last one being COVID. What are the lessons learned that are perhaps helping to guide this global emergency?
The last outbreak to be declared a public health emergency of international concern was actually MPOX in 2022. That's and right. It was decided later in 2023 to stand down the designation of a public health emergency of international concern. And that's now been stood back up as a result of some of the changing dynamics and also the development of this particular new strain, clade 1B. However, the sort of consequence of that declaration really serves to bring us the attention and the resources that we need. But it also does mean exactly as you asked, that we're able to leverage and bring on board the lessons that have been learned from prior outbreaks. I think that more than, while there's many across laboratory sciences, treatment, the development of vaccination, and all of these different components that comprise a public health emergency response. To me, I think that what we need to continue to remember and what has been made so clear over these past years is the need for very robust community engagement to work with civil society organizations and to be sure that we really bring to the front effective risk communication and community engagement. Because with all of the science behind us, we still need to be able to talk to people, to understand people, and also to be sure that we understand them, to be sure that any response to the problems that they face are in accordance with their needs and ultimately are in the service of saving human life, which is what we're here to do.
Dr. Sam Boland, thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
That was Dr. Sam Boland, Acting Incident Manager at WHO Regional Office for Africa. You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It's time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Health Chat. Uganda has intensified surveillance in its border areas with the Democratic Republic of Congo, which is a hotspot for the Mpox virus. The move is to prevent Mpox from entering the country. Currently, Uganda has no active cases of Mpox, according to the country's Ministry of Health. The two imported cases in late July have been treated and resolved without complications. So far, the ministry has designated more than 20 districts along its border with the DRC as high-risk areas for Mpox transmission. Here is more from Emmanuel Aine Biona, Senior Public Relations Officer of Uganda's Ministry of Health.
We have already intensified our risk communication for prevention. We have also ensured that our laboratory systems are triggered to ensure that they are quick to pick any suspected cases for testing. Uganda is a known leader as far as responding to emerging epidemic diseases. We've demonstrated so during Ebola outbreaks and also during Marburg outbreaks. So the Mpox finds a very resilient system that will be able to prevent its transmission.
The resurgence and spread of mpox is keeping health officials worldwide on high alert. This is the second time in just over 2 years that the WHO has declared mpox to be a global emergency. Dr. Muhumuza Umar, a public health expert with the Africa CDC and a Yali fellow, elaborates on some reasons for the resurgence of outbreaks such as mpox and what can be done, particularly with the contribution of young people.
The reason why we have re-emergency of diseases like mpox lies in about three reasons, right? The first reason is, do we have enough vaccination for mpox on the continent, right? Because one of the ways to reduce diseases like COVID-19 in the past was through vaccination, and we create something called herd immunity. As we speak today, we still face the challenge of vaccine inequity. So we have a lot of vaccine inequities on the continent. Even while we have announced it as a public health emergency, we do not have enough vaccines to vaccinate people or people at risk, right? That's the biggest challenge. So there's re-emergence of mpox. Secondly, are we following the One Health approach to addressing critical epidemics like mpox? You see, the One Health approach is one that looks at how people engage with animals as well as the environment, right? Now, we have had people encroach onto the natural ecosystem. So when I say encroaching into the natural ecosystem, you have people going into the rainforests, and now they are interacting with potential carriers of the mpox, the monkeys and the rats, right? So it literally means that we need to employ a One Health approach that looks at both human, environment and animal health. So when you comprehensively look at that, you then understand that environment plays a critical role in addressing healthcare issues, as well as animals play a critical role in propelling or addressing these health concerns. So it is more like it is a cascade of issues. But then lastly, we need to talk about the question of risk communication. I'm not going to go through the whole pandemic preparedness and how we prepare for epidemics and pandemics or disaster management, right? But risk communication is very key, because you recognize that we have mpox and it's been declared as a public health emergency on the continent and globally. But when you go through the internet and everything, there's a lot of mis and disinformation regarding what mpox looks like, right? No one seemingly believes that mpox is actually an emergency, right? And you will have people who will be against the mpox vaccine like they've been against the previous vaccines like COVID, right? So we now need to employ a mechanism to address the mis and disinformation regarding emergencies, but also regarding vaccination as a whole, right? And then we'll have tackled the bigger issue. And also, by the way, the misinformation does not stop there. We need to create trust in the system. Most Africans do not trust that their governments can actually deliver a good public health response to an epidemic like mpox, right? So through leveraging things like social media, we need to change the narrative.
How do we engage young people to really be part of the solution?
Oftentimes, engaging young people for most actors is about ticking the box, right? It's never meaningful youth engagement. So I'll use the word youth because we normally use young people and youth synonymously, right? So meaningful youth engagement is not about having young people in positions of leadership when they do not have the power to make the decisions, right? But also secondly, youth engagement does not mean having young people in a conference and discussing, say, for example, what public health means, right? Because youth engagement must translate to actions, especially at grassroots, in the different communities where they come from. I'll give an example of what meaningful youth engagement means, especially in the context of the Africa CDC. When we had surge of COVID-19 cases, Africa CDC instituted a platform called the AU Bingwa platform. Bingwa means champions. So these were young people championing response to the pandemic itself. First, what they did was train young people. So when you train young people, you're giving them a platform. That's the first point in youth engagement and empowering young people, right? Secondly, when you're training them, you're equipping them with knowledge. That is the second point on meaningfully engaging young people. You build capacity, right? But third, these young people were then deployed to their different areas, different localities on the continent in Africa. That is the third step of meaningfully engaging young people to create positive change in their communities. When these young people went to their communities, they then conducted research on the different barriers to vaccine demand, especially for the COVID-19 vaccine. So that is also empowering young people in research. And then fourth, Africa CDC then conducts what we call the annual Youth Pre-Conference. This year, the Youth Pre-Conference is themed on amplifying youth voices in health policy and research. So these young people then come together, deliberate, and then present their recommendations to state actors, heads of states. So they now have a seat in decision-making and mainstreaming all these beautiful ideas that they collect through our process. The same model can be replicated for endemics or epidemics like the Mpox that has been just been declared as a public health emergency. And for me, that is what meaningful youth engagement looks like. Unlike where we have young people, say, for example, attend a conference, and then we tick the box that, yes, we had young people, have them at a luxurious hotel, let them have probably the best buffet. That is not meaningful youth engagement, right? Or have them sit at the table, yet they cannot make decisions, right? That is not meaningful youth engagement.
A lot of times when we talk about the youth, we talk about employment and also entrepreneurship. When it comes to health, public health and their own health, to what extent do you think that young people understand the importance to have health as one of the top on their agenda?
I think young people understand the concept of health and why health should be prioritized in terms of planning, especially for our governments, prioritized by young people in terms of engagement in public health. I think they do understand, but the challenges at hand do not allow young people to effectively engage in healthcare spaces. I'll give an example, right? So you have young people who are struggling to have a meal, right? Would you rather tell these young people to go and seek healthcare for a minor illness? The answer is no, because they do not have the resources, say, for example, to go to a hospital and engage in a healthcare seeking program, right? But also, young people understand that health is a priority for them, because without good health, then young people cannot engage in entrepreneurship, young people cannot seek employment, young people cannot engage in education, cannot engage in sport, as long as they are sick. So health is a critical determinant for other sectors of our economies in Africa. And young people understand this. But they face these systemic barriers, right? Probably governments are not appropriating enough money to the health sector. Or young people do not have enough sensitization to understand the critical areas that affect public health, right? They do not have knowledge, so that's a knowledge gap. But also probably not enough money is being put into young people's research to understand what the extent to which health can become a burden to them, right? So, and this is why I think we need to now shift the narrative, right? Get young people engaged, put them at the decision-making table, let them make these critical decisions, because they now have the knowledge, they understand the impact of health, and they know, and they're the largest demographic, by the way. Mm-hmm. So if we have something like Mpox, the chance that a young person will be affected is very high, right? Because there are so many of them, right? And it's non-segregative. It's not going to come out looking for the young or the very old ones. So the chance, and the young people are the ones who are engaged in travel, moving from one country to another. So they are high-risk people. But also young people these days, we've digitalized the public health space, right? Who uses digital health the most? Young people, they are innovative. They have the knowledge. They have the skills. They know what tech is supposed to be used. They're engaging in telemedicine.
You are ALE fellow, and you are a professional doctor. How is this fellowship?
This fellowship gives me an opportunity to lead, an opportunity to make decisions, an opportunity to learn and learn and relearn, an opportunity to engage in a country where there's a form of accountability, especially in the public health space, and where there's a form of organization in how matters flow regarding health. It also gives me an opportunity to showcase what meaningful youth engagement looks like. And that's the cornerstone of what we'd call constructive leadership. So for me, being a Yali Fellow is, that's like the A plus for me, right? Because I continue to learn and we get the spaces, the collaborations, the connections. Today I'm at Voice of America to share my thoughts on how to better the health system in Africa. And this is an opportunity to amplify my voice. And this is what Yali is doing.
That was a public health expert and Yali Fellow, Dr. Muhumuza Umar.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
That's all for this edition of Health Chat. Thank you all for joining us, and thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Linoch Mudu, in Washington, with producer Mokbilia Barrow. Until next time, take care, stay well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
Is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message, leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
VOA Africa has a wide variety of programs for you. News, lifestyle, health, politics, youth, women, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, television, and the internet on voaafrica.com.